Welcome to Conversations with Leaders on Tremendous Life Radio, providing some of today's most influential and inspiring leaders a platform to share their stories of growing up, what happened, and what they're doing today. Now, here's your host, Todd Weaver.
Welcome, everybody, to Tremendous Life Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hey, we're really excited about our guest tonight. We have Mr. Chad Hymas. Chad is a best-selling author, president of his own communications company, and a world-class wheelchair athlete. He's also a world-class speaker. Chad speaks to organizations and individuals about purpose-driven approach to leadership and living a life of prosperity and happiness. The Wall Street Journal calls Chad one of the 10 most inspirational people in the world. He's here with us tonight. His latest book, Doing What Must Be Done, is available now. You can get it at chadhymas.com and all the major outlets. Chad, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Todd, the pleasure is mine, and thank you to all the listeners joining in as well. This is going to be a fun night.
Well, thank you so much. We're really looking forward to it. It's a real honor having you. Well, I know we had a little bit of technical problems hooking up, but I'm sure everything is going to be great. We're really looking forward to it. Let's get started right away, Chad. We'd like to get to know our guests way back. Can you share with us some of your early memories about growing up? And what was going on inside of you?
Yeah, my pleasure, Todd, and to the rest of you. I'm a Salt Lake City boy, Salt Lake City, Utah, located in the western desert. Kind of borders Nevada and then Colorado and Arizona. We have the Four Corners and grew up in Salt Lake City in a very, very kind of a unique household. I'm the oldest of four, so I've got two younger brothers, younger sister. My dad is LDS and my mother is Catholic. So I grew up with books of Mormons and candles in my house. I mean, it's really, really unique household and very, very special, kind of very, very diverse, but I grew up to be a respecter of all faiths and all beliefs, and so I think that's kind of a unique home to grow up into. I enjoyed growing up playing all sorts of athletics. Loved athletics in high school, and that's really what I was one of my main focuses. I mean, I focused on grades and spirituality, and those were things that were taught to me from a young boy. That those were most important. But really, as growing up, as far as I can remember, I really loved to thrive, especially in basketball, and that kept me, I think, out of trouble. And so there's kind of my childhood background. I graduated in 92. I'm 40 years old now. After high school, I went and served 2 years on a religious type English service speaking mission to Bangkok, Thailand. So went to Bangkok and taught a little bit of Christianity and taught a little bit of English to the villages of Thailand for 2 years. Straight, no coming home during that two-year time frame, and my high school sweetheart went and got her degree in college in the legal arena as a paralegal. Came back home after serving 2 years, and Shondell and I were married 6 months after that, after I returned back. And let's just cut right to the chase. We shared two little boys together, Christian and Kyler. We called Christian Ace. And Kyler, we just call him K or call him Kyler. And then 6 years after we were married, everything, it kind of went upside down after that. And so that takes you to that point. Hopefully that gives the audience kind of a background on me and my background and then where I'm from. And wish I could hear everybody else's. I really do. I mean, it's fun to hear where people come from and what leads them up to certain challenges and things that they face and then what that brings them back. But that takes you up to 6 years after I was married. How's that, Todd?
That's really good. I have like a million questions already, though. I want to take us back there a little bit, if you would. I want to just ask you a couple questions that came up as you were describing that. It must have, looking back today in that childhood, you must feel a lot of gratitude for having you kind of had your mind pried open, or it was never really slammed shut, I guess, with all that diverse thing, you know, with the religious background in the home and all that, correct?
I would use your second metaphor, never slam shut. And that even goes for, that even goes for people that aren't Christian. And, of course, that's even broad more as I've traveled the world the last 13 years and been to, all seven continents and 42 countries, sharing a very personal message. I've come to learn that there's no one better than the other. Not that I didn't believe otherwise. Please know that. My faith has never taught me that. But seeing it and actually being with folks that have completely different perspective and points of view, what makes them or myself better than one another? And there's not, I've never ever had a good response to that or never had a good answer. There are beautiful people everywhere, and I've really enjoyed the last 13 years.
Well, now, and Chad, thank you for that. I'm interested too, you know, getting to know, because you're in a leadership role today, or you speak to a lot of leaders in corporate America, as well as maybe the individuals. Looking back on your childhood, you mentioned you were the oldest. What kind of affected that? Can you see how that kind of guided you or how it shaped you today, looking back on those things?
Yeah, doesn't mean anything. Both my younger brothers got a better build. They're better looking. My sister is a sweetheart. And so, you know, I guess I could make up something and say, yeah, it made me a leader. But the truth is both those younger boys pushed me when I was a young lad because I had kind of a tall, lanky build. And both my brothers had they were both more masculine, more muscular than I was, while we all played the same sport. And we were all very close. And maybe I'll just add one more piece. You know, when I had my life-altering change 6 years after marriage, it was my two brothers that never left the hospital room in those first critical, you know, days of, is he going to make it, is he going to die? The boys, I'm not talking just the hospital, I'm not talking the chapel. The boys were, even though I was unconscious, I got photos. I mean, the boys were right there with their heads on my chest. And so, and my sister, she would have been there, I think, but she had a little more difficult time. She was there with my mother outside there, but I've got photos of me and my brothers. We're very tight. Even to this day, my two younger brothers, and my sister for that matter, I take pride in telling people that they're very protective of me, and I love that about my brothers. So they might not tell me that they love me, but they don't have to. You know, I know it. So we probably ought to get on a different subject real quick.
Well, no, I appreciate you mentioning that, Chad. I really do, and I can hear the passion, you know, the emotion in your voice too. It speaks to really day-to-day and all the things we do to really value the relationships that we have, because not everybody has the story that you have and when those things happen. So that's a heck of a way to really value it. But you describing that is really cool. I'm just glad you mentioned that. Really, you seem from this end a blessed man. So let's talk about...
Thanks for the opportunity to share that. I get to share interviews regularly, and very seldom do I get to talk about, hey, what was everything like before 2001? I mean, you know, we just get right to 2001, right? We don't ever go back to the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. And so I didn't know that we were going to do that tonight. And thank you for that.
It's really our pleasure. I wasn't sure we were going to do it either, Chad, but that's the way the show goes. Right? One question again, if I could squeeze one in before 2001, were you any good in sports? Were you any good in basketball? Did you excel in those things?
Well, if you look at my own stats that I kept in my gym, I was dang good. But if you look at the stats my dad and my mom, man, they kept pushing me. My brothers were always, they were better athletes. But today I'm proud to say that my two boys, you know, it's just an honor to watch their behavior on the court. They play ball and they're good, not because of the points they score. You know, this is the best time of year. This is the NBA playoffs for us. I mean, we're Miami against the Spurs. Starts here this week, and so it's a fun time of year. We love basketball, but I will just say this. My boys are good in my mind because of their assists. In other words, everybody on the court, from my perspective, is at their best when my kids have positive vocabulary, when they're not talking back talk to the ref, and when they're focused, on, even when they shoot an air ball or do something wrong, and that's why they play. From my perspective. And so the message there for you and I and our listeners is not, you know, how good were we or how good are we in sports, but maybe a better question to ask each one of us and for you to ask in your personal journals. And a question I ask every day is this: how many assists am I dishing out to my wife, even though I'm on the road? How many assists are my boys hearing from me, whether it be just because I'm present at a recital, some sort of a basketball tryout or a practice? Or, you know, how many 4-H clubs am I showing up for my daughter for her horse activity? How many assists am I dishing out? And I think that's a better way to, you know, better way to measure it. So anyway, there's my 2 cents worth on sports.
That's huge, actually. You know, and listening to that brought back memories. I'm really blessed as well, Chad. I see how I grew up in a home. My father was involved in high school and college athletics for 40 plus years. So I saw that power example all the time. Now, I didn't follow. I might not have been a real good role model, but that subtle kind of imprinting that's there all the time. My father talked about sportsmanship and leadership and team building and, you know, the team player constantly. He diligently, selflessly, a lot of his own time volunteering, you know, always about. I remember seeing him officiating bitty league football games, real young men, like 8, 9, 10-year-old guys. And I'd hear him on the sideline. I'd hear him as the line judge, and he'd say, "Up easy, gentlemen, up easy, gentlemen." You know, he was always about the sportsmanship and the teamwork. And that's huge when I listen to guests like you and other guests in the military and sports. To excel in those things, it's really it's a camaraderie and a real team effort. And you just talked about that as well. Your kids are blessed too. They'll know it. They probably know it already today, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's cool to hear. All right, well, let's get to it then. 6 years after you got married, things were rolling on. What were you doing for a living at that point? And what?
I was a contractor, buddy. Yeah, I was a subcontractor. So I had to, my dream's always been to be a guide. G-U-I-D-E, a guide. Mm-hmm. And what that is, for the folks that might not know, a guide can mean many things, I guess in different professions, but the guide that I'm talking about is somebody that takes someone else up in the mountain and gets them close to an elk. In other words, I've been hunting with my family for years, and so what I was doing with the construction company, because no bank wanted to lend a young kid that kind of money to go build a Jurassic Park with elk. So there's the vision, a Jurassic Park with elk and people to come hunt. And I was wanting to buy that ground. A lot of acreage, a lot of mountain terrain, 11 natural springs, elevation 62 to 11.8. I mean, Todd, it's God's country. Elk everywhere, trout everywhere. I mean, so I was building that by using the funding from the construction company that I started. I had 38 employees, and I would go to work in the morning, get the crews going, and try and get off work around 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and go work and take a crew with me and go work on that dream. And that's what I was doing for 5 to 6 years. I mean, it was a long-term project, building a lodge, and always wanted to be a guide. Kind of funny, when I woke up from being in a coma, my dad told me that I didn't need to wear camouflage or carry a rifle to be a guide, and that's kind of where it all started.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that more. What happened in those months after you were following that dream? You were working hard.
Yeah, we'll just cut right to it. You know, I think we've held them off for 14 minutes. I Shondell called me while I was in Salt Lake working with the construction company. It was a Tuesday afternoon. It was April 3rd. It was 2001, about 2 o'clock, 2:15, and she asked me if I would hurry home because the little boy Kyler, so our younger of the two, had just taken his first two steps. And so he was one, a little over age one. He was born in December. That's now April. And he had just started to walk. And Shondell was thrilled about this. I've got a basketball hoop set up in our garage out at the ranch. And me and the other young lad, Ace, we call him Ace, he was three. We play every night. I mean, every night we'd go and turn the spotlights on in the garage, and he and I and Shondell would play. I mean, we just, with a little tiny basketball, we just have a blast. This kid, I got video footage of that stuff. But Kyler wasn't walking yet. So Shondell said, "Hey, you got, you know, let's go 2-on-2. This kid's walking. Let's get him shooting instead of sitting on his bottom. Let's get him shooting on a little hoop that's about 3 foot from the ground." And long story short, I raced home to go play ball. I got the crews lined out to finish off the evening. I bagged the elk ranch stream that night. And I went home, but I still had to feed the elk. I had a couple hundred head that I was using for breed stock. And an elk is a little bit bigger than a horse, about 1,400 pounds. They're massive animals. I think they're God's greatest creation next to all of you on the call. Elk are absolutely beautiful. And even if people didn't shoot with a rifle or with a bow, I just want them to shoot with their camera. I mean, I want people to get close and see how majestic they are. They're just beautiful creatures. And so I went home and got on a tractor, went out in the field, hauling a one-ton bale of hay. That bale of hay weighs more than a pickup truck. The red light was flashing on my dashboard, and that red light meant that my hydraulics were empty. I knew that because it flashed, been flashing for a couple of nights prior. So I saw the warning light again, and I knew what it meant. There was no leaks. The tank was empty. That's like our listeners driving on an empty tank of gas, knowing the light is there and not stopping by to fill it up. Have you ever driven on an empty tank of gas just to see how far you can get? And I was... That was to say there's probably many people on this call that could say, absolutely. And that's what I was doing. I ignored the warning light. I put that tractor in reverse to get by the feeder, and I think I tapped the brakes a little too hard, Todd, because within just milliseconds, that one-ton bale of hay that was 15 feet above my head toppled over backwards, releasing itself because of the weight from the forks, toppled over and landed right on my body as I was sitting on the seat. There was no cage, no glass. Instead of falling back, left or right, I fell forward. My head and back broke right to the steering column, and I can't believe that I lived through that. It doesn't make sense to me. The barrel of hay was still on top of me. It never did loosen. It was still intact. The tractor never shut off. It was still running. All I could do was hear the diesel motor purring. I couldn't feel my feet. I couldn't feel my legs. I couldn't feel the midsection of my body, nor my stomach. Working our way up, I couldn't feel my chest. My arms were gone, and I couldn't feel any part of my mouth. Of course, it's because it had busted through the steering column, and it was numb. All I could do was breathe through my nose, blink my eyes, and I could hear everything, and I was all alone. Nobody in the field with me, nobody watching. I was by myself. And I just sat there, and, I think it's, I'll be honest. I didn't go to the other side. I didn't see a light. I didn't die and come back. But I did have a conversation with my maker in my mind that I probably have only had once in my life. It's amazing what happens when you find yourself in a moment like that. There are probably some listeners that have had that experience where you have no one to call on, and you don't know who to call on, and you don't have to be a religious fellow or a religious gal to call. And you just call for help, even if it's in your mind. And I did that, and I began to count my breaths one at a time. And I knew that if I counted long enough, I would be able to make it. And so I just counted my breaths through my nose. It was difficult, and I felt myself getting lightheaded, and I just knew I had to keep staying awake because she was expecting me, right? I mean, she was, we're going to play ball. No access to cell phone. I mean, I don't even know where that ended up, but I had it. I just don't know where it went. And I never did hear a ring. All I know is that about 48 minutes after the sun went down, and this comes from dispatch in Tooele County, a call was received. And that call was made by my wife. She ended up coming out in the field. I remember this. I was fully conscious. She spotted me in the headlights of her vehicle, still in the tractor. She got out of her car. If you go to Facebook or if you go to chadhymus.com or if you just Google Chad Hymus, you'll see the movie that they made on our store. You'll see a one-minute or two-minute clip. And they depict it very, very well. My wife races up to the tractor. She calls my name twice. No response. She thought that I was gone. She went back home. That's when the headlights disappeared in the darkness. And she called Tooele. She called Tooele Dispatch. And 12 minutes later, that's when the first responders showed up. There was five cowboys. We don't live in the city. We live in the country. Five cowboys that responded and three Utah State Troopers. Eight men total. And eight men lifted what weighs more than a pickup truck, a full-size truck, off of my body. They didn't tip it. They didn't, if they would have tipped it, that would have killed me. They didn't cut the strings. That would have suffocated me. They lifted that sucker straight up off me. Larry Russell caught my limp body, laid it on the dirt floor, removed his pocket knife. This is one of my cowboy friends. And I'm going to try and say this as appropriately as possible on the phone here, on this interview. Larry Russell made a pathway for me to breathe through my neck using his tool. I know that might sound gruesome, but it's not. It's called freedom. Although I have to admit to all of you, that I did curse Larry for saving my life for years. And today I couldn't be more grateful. And so that takes you to the night of the event. I was blown away to the hospital. I never did get to see the son's first deaths. And I was put in an induced coma immediately while the doctors went in to repair the damaged bones and see if they couldn't recover my life. And the next thing I remember is waking up 14 days later with my father at my side. And maybe we can take it to that point. I woke up to my dad, not my wife. My brothers were outside the room. My dad wanted to be the first to talk to me, and he asked permission from my wife. So Shondell was there with him, but it was just those two, no white coats, no doctors. They wanted to be there, and it was just my dad and my wife. That was it.
Well, I have a lot of questions, Chad. I mean, you know, thank you so much for sharing this up to this point. You, I know you've taken the opportunity to share this story many, many times, and I don't know how you can help but relive it as you describe it. It must be hard, difficult. That you never lost consciousness at all. So, that, from what I heard you say, can you share with us? I mean, what other than what you did?
Yeah,
what
I mean,
kind
I,
of things
I,
go through your mind? I mean, you know, like if this is all
you,
over.
I mean, I can tell you. I mean, my life's over. It's over that quick. Is it really gone? I can't breathe. You know, I don't feel any pain, but the pain of not breathing is pain. The pain of suffocation. That's a scary pain. And I used, you know, I've never really drowned or gone through that, but I started getting lightheaded, and that scared me. And I do have a faith. I did serve a church mission. I've got a little bit of knowledge, and I'm not going to have more knowledge than anybody, but I do believe in a greater plan than this, and I do believe in a creator that knows a lot more than I know, and I do believe in a greater plan. So I hope it's okay that I share that on this call without offending anybody, in a very, very broad sense. And so with that belief, I called for help and asked for strength. And I'm not saying that's why I got to live, because some don't make it, Todd, and it doesn't make sense to me. I'll give you an example. We're missing 229 of our dear friends that are somewhere in an ocean, they think, and it's been 4 months and we can't find them. It doesn't make sense to me that some make it and some don't. That's why I believe there's a greater plan than this. There's got to be. A gunman walks in just last week in California, Santa Barbara, where I love to go to Santa Barbara. In fact, I've spoken at that college at a convocation. And he takes out a bunch of his roommates, three, and takes out several fellow students, and then takes himself. I don't have an answer for that, nor should any of you, and nor should we judge that. All I'm saying is that time is very, very precious, and I got to live, whatever that means. And so that's what went through my mind. I kept fighting for air. And when I saw the headlights appear 48 minutes later, I was motivated. I mean, she was here. I heard her scream. I heard her crying. I mean, she was yelling. But I couldn't respond back. I mean, that's all depicted in the movie and several excerpts on the website and different interviews. I mean, I don't need to get into detail. You can imagine her anxiety. The worst part is she had the kids in the car with her. I mean, you don't leave a 3- and a 1-year-old at home alone. And so to go back and look at YouTube and hear Shondell's recollection of what happened and how she handled all this, so you don't have to listen to me tell you, it's absolutely phenomenal. Let me go to the part when I woke up. When I wake up, my dad gives me the good news and the bad news. And all he says is this: son, you're here. That's good news. And I'm right here with you. And son, there's more good news. Your wife is right behind me. She allowed me to be the first to talk to you. I got more good news, son. You're breathing. And that is excellent news, even though the machine is doing it for you and you don't have to do it by yourself. So then I got even more good news. There's a bunch of family out in the hallway that are so glad that you're here. And then my dad gave me some good news that wasn't very pleasant to hear. He didn't call it bad news. He just said, I need to be honest with you, son. He said, when you took your shortcut 2 weeks ago, you broke a bunch of bones, and you severed your spinal cord. The doctors fixed all the broken bones. That's excellent news, son. The technology they used and the titanium and the bones from your hip, They fixed it. You don't have to wear a cast at all. They were not able to fix the spinal cord. So we've looked in Africa. We've looked in Indonesia. We've looked in Australia. We have looked everywhere. And son, despite all the good work that Christopher Reeves is doing today, there is no cure for your spinal cord. You have lost your feet. You have lost your legs. You've lost all of the use of your midsection. You did lose your stomach, and you're not able to control that right now, son. And you lost 2 out of your 3 chest muscles. The doctors do think that one day you'll breathe on your own, but that's going to be up to you, son. And you did lose most of the strength and use of your arms. And then my dad said one more thing. I have one more thing to say to you, and then I'm going to leave. I want to know if you're going to step up to the plate and be a better guide with no hands and no legs than you ever thought you could be with camouflage, a rifle, and your hands and legs. And that's the question he left me with. And he turned around and walked away.
Well, now take us through that, Chad. Here's the hit, and we don't have enough time. We could do hours of this, really, but what my question to you is, to the core, is how do you work through turning that from a seemingly tragic, is a tragic event? What were some of the action steps you took to turn that around, to bring a lot of inspiration and to be positive?
I'm cool with all that, but here's the thing. We're taking an awful big leap with that question, right? Because it doesn't happen overnight for anybody, but there are a couple of key things that I'd like to share that help people transition from seemingly tragic events, and I'll name a couple. Cancer, the loss of a child, a spouse addicted to pornography, a teenager making a bad choice, dealing with an aging parent, when your own health begins to fail you and you don't like it very much. I mean, we can go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. I might be paralyzed physically, but there are several people listening to this call that are paralyzed financially, emotionally, physically. We can go on technologically. The way the technology is working today, if we don't catch up and stay on top of technology, we're going to get left in the background. So some people refuse to embrace, you know, the simple fact of how we communicate, which is texting nowadays. If I want to get hold of my wife and my kids, I promise you I'm not going to call them. I'm going to text them because that's the quicker response, the quicker. So we have to embrace the way the world is changing. And so a couple key points with the transition to answer your question. For those of us who choose to refuse change and dwell on the change at hand, life will be more painful. Not just painful for you, but painful for everybody else that loves you. So if you could switch on the light bulb and realize that your life never was about you, but it's for everybody else that's put on your path, easier said than done, by the way. Watch the productive person you become. Let me give you a quick classic example. Let me use my good friend John Walsh. Many of you will recognize John's name. He's on Fox TV Saturday night. Let's look at his tragedy 23 years ago. Do you happen to know what he lost, Todd?
I believe he lost his son.
Good call. That's right. I'd rather break my neck, to be honest with you, Todd. I mean, I'd rather lose my life than lose a son. That's just Chad Hyman speaking. John Walsh lost something to me that I don't think there's anything on this earth that could be a greater loss than to lose one of my boys. This cat loses a son due to abduction under his watch. So now add all these pieces together. He's babysitting at a mall. The wife is out with the girls. It's his only son, Adam, and he's in charge of the son. He's accountable. He's responsible for the son's well-being. Let's cut right to the chase. His son is abducted, and I want you to look at something very close. Look at what John did over the course of a little bit of time. Not a lot. He didn't wait too long. I waited longer. I was self-pity for a lot longer than John. John did not put a big number on his problem. He did for a while. My point is this. I always ask people, how much are your hands worth to you? Your hands. I mean, do you use them a lot? Do you use them a little?
how much are your hands worth? And most respond back saying they're worth everything. I mean, I use them for everything I do. And I couldn't agree more. And then I make them close their eyes. And I say, you just lost your eyesight. You're no longer able to see your children take their first step. You're done watching them score. In fact, when your child does score his first three-pointer, your wife will tell you, hey, sweetheart, he just shot a three-pointer. And when the daughter gets married one day, I bet you walk her down the aisle, Dad, so you've got some pride and integrity, but your daughter's going to hold you tight because you need a guide you can't see, which means you can't even drive yourself. Now what means more to you? What would you rather have, your eyes or your hands? And 99.9% of people say they'd rather have their eyesight, which tells you what their greatest asset is. It's not their eyes or their hands. It's the people around them. They want to see the people with their eyes. And that's what John did. He didn't put a big number on his problem for a very lengthy period of time. If you were to ask John Walsh how much his son is worth today, he'll tell you straight up what Adam's worth. He's worth number one. Guess what John Walsh does with the other 99% of his time, effort, and energy? He wakes up in the morning, and he finds someone else to serve other than himself. And because of that, he's put thousands, not 1,000, thousands behind bars and served millions of people. By the way, he never wanted to be on television anyway. Never wanted to be on Fox, never wanted the awards, never wanted the accolades. He's got to keep his focus on what he can control and not on what he lost. And that, my friend, is how you honor a seemingly tragic event and turn it into a triumph. My dad told me, here, I'll just give it to you from my wife's perspective. So my dad turns around and says, are you going to be a better guy? And then now it's Shondell's turn. And I'm going through this bad news. And Shondell says, I'm here. And she holds my numb hand. I'm watching her hold my hand. I can't feel it, but I can see it. And I said to her something to the effect, you know, it's over. And she said, did you not just hear your dad? And I said, Shondell, who's going to teach the boys how to play basketball? She said, so let me get this straight. You're willing to die or leave us because you can't play basketball with the kids. I said, the kids deserve someone that can teach them to play basketball. And then I took it a step further. Shondell, you and I have always talked about having more children. How's that going to work? You deserve to bear more children. She said, so you're willing to divorce me. You're willing to divorce and become the majority of Americans and people around the world. That is a stat, by the way. I'm not just smoking out of my mouth here. The majority of people end up in divorce. She said, you're willing to become a stat and get divorced because we can't make a child? I said, you deserve that luxury in life. She said, that's the most selfish thing I've ever heard you say. I guess we all know what your greatest asset is. That's what she said to me in the hospital room. I guess we all know what means most to you. In essence, at that moment in time, what meant most to me was me, not her and the kids. People have to take their focus off of their funerals, off of, I'm not saying to diss that. That's how you respect and honor your losses, folks. That's how you honor your cancer, is to live through it with pride and integrity. And I'm not saying fight it to the death. I'm saying honor it by loving other people and serving others, and don't put the focus on your breast cancer or your lost spouse or your illness or your the doctors are giving you 2 months to live, or perhaps you just lost my grandfather, bless his heart. He just lost his wife of 53 years, and he's having a hard time trying to figure out how to not be alone at night. And he calls me every night. He calls me. Chad is just so lonely. Grandpa, go to your Catholic church and find someone to serve more than yourself. Go find a neighbor. Go find another one. Go find someone to serve. Get your mind. That's how you honor Grandma. But Chad, it's just so lonely. Grandpa, I know it's lonely. I know that. I know that it's lonely. It's been 8 months. If you want to honor Grandma, if you want to give her the greatest honor, you go find someone to serve. And Todd, what I just shared with you has taken me to 40-plus countries and all 7 continents by myself. And I'm no more physically challenged today than I was the day I woke up from a coma. In other words, I haven't got my legs back. They're still numb. I did get rid of the trach, though, so I can breathe on my own. And I use a push chair, too, now. No more electric wheelchair. I push with my wrist with the limited function of my arms. And I still have no feeling from the nipples down. And Sean Bell and I just celebrated 20 years. And we now have 3 children instead of the 2 boys. We've adopted a little girl from Guatemala. And I'm proud to announce to all of you that we're expecting our 4th. So as soon as we get the call from Ethiopia, Shondell will be on a plane with her mother to go pick up our 4th daughter, who is 7 years old, a year younger than Gracie. We got Gracie when she was 3 days old. She's now 9. And we've just adopted a girl that's a year younger than Gracie.
Chad, that's so cool.
My dad's not so stupid, is he? I mean, but we took a big leap. I mean, we didn't go through, there's no one direct answer. I mean, you said, how do you get through it all? I mean, this took months, years to try and battle through this. But I tried to give it to you with a couple of principles. And I want to just recap the principles and then open it up to your lines or to you. Remember that when you live for yourself, that is a selfish person, and there's no worse way to live. You've got to put your focus on other people. Number 2, do not put a big number on your challenge. When you do, you're less productive, you're less happy, and you are less successful. And number 3, you must be willing to adapt with change. In other words, just because I ate certain foods before my accident doesn't mean that I have to eat those same foods today. That's how I control my bowel. I want you all to know that I'm not hooked up to a colostomy bag. There's no catheter hooked up to my midsection, none. I train myself how much to drink and when to cast, even on an airplane, and I don't commute to the bathroom. I cover up with a blanket, and I use an empty bottle, and I throw the sucker away when I'm done. And I do it discreetly, and I do it right in front of passengers with a blanket over me. I mean, I'm just being honest. I travel the world by myself, and I don't know who's going to help me get in a taxi tomorrow. I will fly to Tucson, Arizona. I speak there tomorrow afternoon. Tomorrow morning, I fly out. And I go to Tucson, and then I think I go to Albany, and then I'm off to Santiago, Chile, before I'm home again, by myself. I'm not saying that to brag. Actually, I am. I never knew that I'd be able to do that. I don't mean that in a boastful way. My dad was right. Son, what if you could be a better guide? And so that's just, I know we spent 38 minutes on this, Todd, but you asked a question that covered a big gap, and so I tried to answer that in about 12 minutes.
Absolutely, and you did. Thank you so much. You did a heck of a job. I know it was kind of an open-ended question. There's so much involved there. You know, and you mentioned something about your dad. Somebody said to me, and it's huge for me, said, my dad keeps getting smarter the older I get.
I've never heard like that. That's great.
Yeah, you know, from my own, you know, from experience, we learn through experience. But that shift that you described, I want to zero in on this, Chad, if I could. You know, when you said it never was about me, it's about other people, and that the realization in that is, from my own experience and listening to you and a lot of other people, is huge. That shift where we suddenly can get out of that, even when you were describing, well, you deserve more children. You deserve that. It's a self-centeredness that's kind of wrapped up in care of others. But it seems to me when I'm saying it. Yeah. But I don't know that.
It's a crutch. And we use those crutches all the time. And that's what I talk about. We got to get rid of the crutches, symbolically speaking. We use those crutches. We say it out loud like we're trying to protect them, when in truth, our incentives are all about us. My grandfather. Chad, it's just so lonely. Grandpa, go find someone to serve. You're going to laugh. Go find someone to help. And when he does that, he's more productive, he's more successful, he's more happy. Go find a widow, Grandpa, in Weeder Garden. Go make dinner for somebody. Go spend time with your niece. Go watch a niece and a nephew, go watch a grandchild play ball tonight, Grandpa. You got all these people around you that love you. You got neighbors all around you, Grandpa. Make a phone call to someone that's not expecting your call and visit for a little bit. Or you can sit there on the couch, turn on the NBA game, and cry because grandma's not by your side.
Right.
And you're not productive at all.
Right. And that sounds harsh.
It does sound harsh, but you know what? You and I grew up with this phrase, tough love. And I want you to think about my dad for a second. Remember what I told you about losing a child? Remember what I told you? I'd rather die myself than to lose a child. Look what my dad was doing. my dad was going through that very thing in the hospital, even though I wasn't abducted and I wasn't shot. My dad was worried that I was going to die because I wanted to. And he didn't want to go. So in truth, my dad was going through pain more than I could imagine, because the truth is I've never lost a son, Todd. All I've done is broke my neck. And I say that facetiously, but the truth is I'd rather break my neck than lose a son. My dad was on the verge of losing his oldest son and losing a daughter-in-law that he adores and losing two little grandchildren because their father was ready to give up after hearing that news. And it was devastating for him, right? Just like it would be for John Walsh or for you to lose a son. And he wanted to know, because he was going through pain, son, I'll do this with you, but I got to know if you're in or if you're out. And it took me some time to grab a hold of that, right? It didn't happen in 1 week. It didn't happen in 1 month. It didn't happen in 1 year. In fact, can I just be honest? It's been 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's lonely on the road when I'm in a hotel room and I'm watching and I've ordered in room service and I'm sitting there on the bed. I'd be lying to you if I told you that I didn't have some self-centered thoughts on a regular basis. That would be a complete lie. What I have to do in those moments is I have to get my focus off of me quickly and quickly find someone else to get it on and get my focus on. And that has led me to impossible dreams. What I just shared with you has led me to doing something I never dreamed of. That is the truth. You can call it serendipity. You can call it fate. You can call it karma. My dad calls it just service. Being a good father to your children. Don't tell your wife you love her. Don't do it, son. Show her.
Mm-hmm.
Show her.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, tell her that she looks great. Thank her for the food. Even though you can't get the door for her, man, you let her. You let her serve you. Son, that's going to be tough. Letting your wife help you use the restroom. That's going to be tough to let her lift you in and out of vehicles. You make sure she knows how grateful you are. And I'm telling you what, Todd, even today, some of the toughest days for me are to watch Shondell. You know, I can do things by myself, but it takes a couple hours to get dressed with no hands. Shondell wants me to go have breakfast with the kids when I'm home. It takes my wife 5 minutes or less to have me dressed. By the way, there's something very bad about that right there. She asks me in the morning what I want to wear. When I'm home, every morning she asks me, and I tell her I want to wear my Wranglers and I want to wear my Harley Davidson t-shirt. And then she puts on me whatever she wants. I hate that. I absolutely... I mean, I wear outfits, for goodness sake. I mean, she has me decorated up, and I can't stand that. But the bottom line is, I am out there laughing and having breakfast with my kids in 5 minutes, and I need to remember to tell her thank you so much for helping me out. And she always says, my pleasure, and I always say this, one day I'm going to pay you back. And that's a self-centered statement right there. So that's self-centered right there. One day, Shonda, I'm going to pay you back. Because her response is what? You already are.
Yeah.
Her response is always, you already are. Chad, stop saying that. And I've been saying that for 13 years, Todd, because I'm so worldly. One day, John, I'm going to pay you back for all you've done. One day, I'm going to pay you back for this. When in truth, she said, you already are just by being a good dad and by trying to be a better husband. So, anyway, I know I've talked. I apologize for
I've
rambled on, but I just want our audience to realize the success they can have through tragedy. And as I look up at the sky tonight, realize there is so much more out there that we don't understand. And for everything that we do understand, there's so much that we don't. And find faith and belief in that and watch what happens in your life when you do that. Just watch. And you don't take my word for it. Just do it yourself and watch what happens. And I probably ought to just leave it at that.
Well, and Chad, thank you so much. And that is, you know, taking action, and through our own personal experience, it isn't, none of this of anything is theory anymore. It's fact for us once we do it, because we can feel it and it resonates with us, the things that you're talking about, once we put something into action. I mean, I could ask you so many questions, you know, how you work through that being a victim, the blaming, you know, your own self-worth, all those things. Can you tell us instead, maybe what... Was there another catalyst was there a book you read? Was there a Bible that you read, a verse? What kind of started bringing you out into being more others focused? If there could be one thing, I know that's
the answer. The answer is yes to all of them, but I'll give you one that comes to my mind quickly. So 3 months before I broke my neck, my dad was at his national convention in Dallas, Texas. My dad was an insurance salesman prior to my accident. Mm-hmm. And he was there, and there was a keynote speaker on the platform. So I want you to see how this all panned out. I mean, because today that's what I do, right?
So right.
My dad was so impressed with this keynote speaker. By the way, this guy's name is Art Berg. He was a quadriplegic, same circumstance as me, but not back then, right? Back then I was fine. When my dad mm-hmm. went to see him speak, I was walking. I was doing the dream. My dad saw him and speak in December. I became paralyzed 4 months later, 3 months later. My dad was so impressed with this guy's talk that he bought his VHS tape, not DVD, VHS, VHS, yeah. 2001, VHS. And my dad tried for a couple months to try and get me and Sean Bell and my brothers and their spouses to come over and listen to this guy's 60-minute talk. He thought it would help us be better people. Long story short, we never made it happen. I mean, we were busy. I know that sounds bad, but it's the truth. So after I became paralyzed 4 months later and a few weeks into rehabilitation, my dad comes in the room with a TV and a VCR, and I can't do anything because I'm laying in the bed, and he pushes play. So I got no choice but to watch the sucker with my dad by myself, no words spoken. And I'll tell you what, I can't remember one word that Art said. I don't remember. But I do know this. He was laughing, something I wasn't doing, and his hands looked like mine. And I remember that he said he was married to a beautiful gal named Dallas, and he had two children they adopted, and then he traveled the world by himself as a speaker. And he was a renowned author. And I thought that was kind of cool, although I hated books back then, and I never dreamed of being a public speaker. I just liked the fact that he was married and happy. And that was our common denominator, right there. So I was so excited about that tape that I asked my dad if there was any way he could get another tape or get another book from, call up his office. So my dad called up his office and placed a large order of tapes, poster, a signed poster, and a book or two or whatever my dad ordered. And lo and behold, it was delivered to me in the hospital by Art Berg himself.
Nice.
Art showed up. So I want you to think about this. This guy's a traveling man, a world-renowned speaker, and this guy shows up to my hospital room because he understands what we've been talking about tonight, and I don't get it. And Art just gets on my bed, removes his jeans to teach me that I could do that. His hands looked like mine. I fell in love with the guy immediately just because he was funny and he was happy. And he drove himself to the hospital for me to come see me. I followed Art for the next 9 months, even after I went home to the hospital, on the Internet, watching where his travels were. I never wanted to be a speaker. I just liked talking to him about, how do you go to the bathroom? How do you eat? How do you court your spouse? I mean, I asked him very intimate and very sacred questions that he was willing to answer for me as long as I didn't make a joke about it and that I needed, that he knew I was sincere. That guy answered every question that I had. And even though I might not have liked his answer, he was always willing to help me. 9 months later, Sean Bell and I went to Hawaii to watch him speak. He invited us. He paid for our ticket. I mean, he flew us to Hawaii for a day. And 2 days after we got home, on February 16th, 2002, Art Berg passed away in his sleep. I don't have an answer for that. I've never experienced a greater loss, but it's when it came to me that I wonder if I could replace the void that Art left behind. And I've been speaking ever since.
That's beautiful, Chad. That really is. That's why I asked the question, because it's gigantic. Time is going by. Man, it goes so fast here. The book, I wanted to talk about the book, Doing What Must Be Done, and that is available at chadhines.com.
Okay. We don't need to go into that. But people can, I'm not here to sell books. But
okay.
Go to Facebook and do this. Don't tell me about the interview tonight. Do this. Go to Facebook and tell me what you're doing tonight to help somebody else. Guess who reads that post?
Nice.
Everybody else in the world, covering the whole globe. And when they see what you're doing, not because of me, because you decided to do it, they're motivated to do it as well. So I want you to post that so that other people see it. I'm not looking to sell more books in this column, sell more tapes. That's not my incentive tonight. I want you to see the reward that comes when you see people's responses after what you're doing to serve people. Let people know what you're doing. Share with us that. I want to hear from my grandpa tonight. Who did he serve? What did he do? It might inspire me to do something for my wife that I didn't think of. Remember my dad? My dad didn't have to call me up or bring the tape in. But because he did that, my whole life was changed. Mm-hmm. You never know who you're going to impact by. So I want these other folks that are on the call to experience the same love and joy and peace that I'm going through in my life. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that I'm challenge-free, right? That doesn't mean that. That doesn't mean that I don't have any struggles. I got struggles every day. But I do have peace. I do have love, and I do have joy. And I do have joy amidst challenges. And I want our listeners to have that same.
Thank you, Chad, so much. Hey, how does anybody get to the Elk Ranch? What's that all about? Where's that? The Elk Ranch?
It's in Central. Hey, it's so cool. My dad quit his job in the insurance industry after I broke my neck, and he took the sucker over. That's what he does now. Several hundred head of elk, Central Utah. It's well known in the state, and people come out for tours all the time. In fact, I'm just going to tell you, keep posting to Facebook, because our first calf should be born any day, and I'll be posting pictures of that. As soon as Shondell sends me pictures of that first calf, it's the greatest time of year out on the ranch, that first calf born and attaching to his mother. Those things are so cute. So anyway, keep abreast of Facebook and our social media, and I'll be posting those pictures.
Hey, one more quick. Thank you. That's so cool. When you mentioned that, the dream is alive, and I got like goosebumps, Chad. What? Tell me, do you track this? How many miles have you put on the last year? Man, you're like all over. You are serving. You are like on the move.
I don't track it. My office does. I mean, I only have two jobs. I got to focus on my health to make sure that I can stay as healthy as possible. So I really watch what I eat, mm-hmm. and I watch my drink intake, water. I drink nothing but water. To keep my, I don't want any UTIs. That's number one killer, paralyzed people. And I focus on who I'm speaking to next to make sure that I deliver, what their needs, fears, and victories are. Everything else is tracked and done by my office staff. So I think last year was 330,000 miles, and about 220 days. And I make all my kids' basketball games. November, December, January, and February are the months where I got to be home Tuesdays and Thursdays for basketball. So,
I had to ask. I just had to ask because your staff has been so gracious in trying to hook this up, and I know you're so busy, so it's been such an honor. And I know I see things on your social pages about Ace and his basketball, and so I know you're there for those things. It's really cool. And I can hear the joy, the freedom almost in your voice. You know, it's wonderful that you took the time and really took the opportunity to share with us. It's been a real valuable, valuable call.
Thanks for having me on, Todd.
Chad, it's been our pleasure. Thank you so much. And enjoy your day. I'm going to stay following you, okay? And we'll talk again maybe soon.
Very well. We'll enjoy that. Y'all take care tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. There you have it, Mr. Chad Hymas. I'll tell you, that Wall Street Journal thing, I'm inspired. I hope you are as well. He really is a genuine, transparent guy, funny, and just really a good message. A seemingly tragic event turned into something that really brought a lot of value to a lot of people. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. Get over to TremendousLifeRadio.com. You can see the upcoming guests. You can contact us there as well. Get over to iTunes, too, if you enjoyed the show. Or I guess if you didn't, and leave a review. We'd love to have you have a review over on iTunes. Just search Tremendous Life Radio over there. We really appreciate Mr. Chad Hymas. You can follow him at chadhymas.com. Learn all about him there. See his upcoming events. Learn everything about him. Thanks so much, everybody, for tuning in. It's been another great show. We couldn't do it without the listeners. We certainly couldn't do it without all the great guests we've had. Until next time, make it a great day.